Hello and welcome to A Health Podyssey. I'm your host, Alan Weil. Birth outcomes in the United States are poor relative to other high-income countries, and racial disparities in critical indicators such as maternal mortality and infant mortality are shockingly large. Now, one policy response to these health system failures has been an effort to assure continuity of health insurance coverage in the postpartum period, a time of risk for maternal and infant health. In the context of new state opportunities to extend Medicaid coverage for longer periods after the birth of a child, it's helpful to see what we can learn from the recently elapsed federal policy that provided continuous Medicaid coverage during the COVID-19 pandemic. What are the postpartum coverage effects of continuous coverage and the implications of those effects for future policy? That's the topic of today's episode of A Health Podyssey. I'm here with Sarah Gordon, assistant professor in the Department of Health Law, Policy, and Management at the Boston University School of Public Health. Dr. Gordon and co-authors published a paper in the March 2024 issue of Health Affairs examining trends in continuous Medicaid enrollment during the postpartum period. They found dramatic effects associated with the policy in effect during the height of the pandemic, with important lessons for policy going forward. We'll discuss these findings in more detail in today's episode. Dr. Gordon, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Do you want to say a little bit about your co-authors and your role with the paper?
Absolutely. So before we jump in, I just want to note that my primary role is as an assistant professor at the Boston University School of Public Health. But this work, this study, was done in my role as a senior advisor on health policy in the Office of the Assistant Secretary for Planning and Evaluation, or ASPE, at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. So while this study and this paper represents work undertaken by ASPE, my viewpoints and comments today do not represent those of HHS.
Appreciate that clarification. And with that caveat, let's get into what you found and what you think the implications are, even if you're not speaking for HHS, as we know you are not. So for as long as I've been working in Medicaid, and that's a long time, we've focused a lot on enrollment of pregnant women early in their pregnancies. That was really a key metric, a quality indicator. Your paper focuses on the postpartum period. So why is that also an important area of focus when it comes to coverage?
There has been increasing focus on postpartum maternal health generally, and for good reason. And part of that reason is that we now have better data. So the CDC has put out a series of briefs, actually, that have looked at the timing of pregnancy-related deaths and found that about one-third of those deaths occur during pregnancy or delivery, 12% occur about a week after birth, and a little over the remaining half occur between a week and a year after birth. And it's about a third in that extended 43 to 365 day period. So traditionally, the postpartum period was defined as about 6 weeks. And this data really highlights ongoing risk throughout that entire postpartum year. So it really highlights the entire postpartum period as an important component of any strategy to address maternal health broadly.
Okay, that's a really helpful explanation. So we have really, truly a maternal mortality crisis in this country. And given the timing of those deaths, it's clear that if we're going to have interventions, they aren't all going to need to be during the pregnancy or right at the time of delivery. The risks extend well past. Now, the landscape of insurance coverage, particularly with respect to Medicaid postpartum, has been in flux in recent years. So given that what your paper does is analyze the effects of one set of changes to help us understand another set of policy options, can you just step back and say how it used to be and then how things have evolved?
Absolutely. So historically, Medicaid programs were federally mandated to provide coverage, pregnancy-related coverage, from conception through 60 days postpartum. And technically, this ends up being the end of the month that the 60th day falls, so 60 to 90 days of postpartum coverage. And so since the beginning of the Medicaid program, this has largely been how Medicaid programs have operated with respect to the pregnancy eligibility pathway to coverage. But three major laws that were passed recently have changed that landscape. The first, which we look at in this paper, was that in 2020, there was the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. And under this law, states were eligible to receive enhanced federal matching funds under certain conditions. And so one of those conditions required states to provide continuous coverage to Medicaid enrollees. So this basically means that almost no Medicaid enrollee can be disenrolled from their coverage. And this started March 18th of 2020 and just ended March 31st of 2023. And this included pregnant and postpartum enrollees as well. So that's what we refer to throughout this paper as the continuous enrollment provision. And second, there was the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. So that law included a five-year state option to use federal dollars to extend Medicaid or CHIP coverage for 1 year postpartum. Like I said, initially, this was only for 5 years, but then in 2022, the Consolidated Appropriations Act made it a permanent option for states. At this point, nearly every state has signed on to some form of postpartum extension. As of January last month, the count was 43 states in DC, which have implemented extensions. Arkansas and Idaho are the states that have not taken really any major action at this point, and Wisconsin only extended from 60 to 90 days.
And so just to put this in context, because Medicaid eligibility could be a topic of a podcast discussion in and of itself, parents are eligible for Medicaid, but the income thresholds historically have been much more restrictive than they were for pregnant women. So at the point of conception, as you know, when you have your first interaction with a clinician and they say, oh, we can get you on Medicaid, the income thresholds for all of Medicaid are quite low, but they were significantly higher than they were for parents in general. So the moment you give birth and you're now looking for eligibility as a parent, the likelihood that you could stay on the program before the Affordable Care Act was very low, and even after the Affordable Care Act, it was lower than for pregnant women. So this continuous coverage provision picks up a lot of people who couldn't otherwise make the transition from pregnancy coverage to parental coverage. Let's go straight to your findings. You looked at what happened as a result of these provisions of the 2020 law that provided continuous coverage during that period of the pandemic. And what did you find?
What we did in this study was to look at patterns of postpartum Medicaid enrollment among births that happened in a baseline year before the pandemic, before the continuous enrollment provision, and compare them to births that happened while that continuous enrollment provision was in place. So we looked at the rate of 12 months of continuous postpartum coverage and the average duration of postpartum coverage, and found that the proportion of people who had 12 months of continuous Medicaid coverage increased from 59.3% before the continuous enrollment provision in 2018. So that means in a typical baseline year before these postpartum extensions were in place, before the continuous enrollment provision, about 40% of people who had Medicaid paid births were actually losing their Medicaid coverage after birth. And then we compared that to births that occurred under the continuous enrollment provision, where we actually saw a really big increase. We saw that 90.7% of people had 12 months of continuous enrollment during the continuous enrollment provision. So that's over a 30 percentage point increase.
So there's this major shift. And before you mentioned that the federal law was 60 days, which could translate into a little bit more than that, presumably a lot of people used to lose coverage right at that point, and now not so much. How does that translate into when people lose their coverage, if they do?
We have a figure in this study where we plot the proportion of people who lose their coverage at each of the 12 months postpartum. And so when we look at our pre-pandemic period before the continuous enrollment provision, we see that the most common month of disenrollment is, unsurprisingly, that third month after birth. So you can see this big peak in this graph right around that third month. And then when we looked during the pandemic under the continuous enrollment provision, that peak is flattened. It's eliminated. So it actually shifts to the most common month of disenrollment being the month of delivery, which is driven by a few specific eligibility groups. But the overall pattern is that three-month cliff is eliminated.
So that's a pretty dramatic finding. And you're right, if you look at the chart in the paper, it jumps out at you visually in a way that maybe we can't convey verbally. So I'm glad you made reference to that. Well, I want to talk to you about a little bit more about the findings, but then, as you mentioned, we've got this changing policy environment, and part of the reason for looking backwards is to look forward. So we'll cover those topics after we take a short break.
Our United Healthcare Community and State Newsletter is your go-to source for the latest Medicaid news and United Healthcare programs serving Medicaid beneficiaries. Subscribe now by visiting our website at uhccs.com/newsletter. Stay in the know by gaining access to our latest blogs, educational videos, and upcoming events. At United Healthcare, our mission is to help people live healthier lives and make the health system work better for everyone in local communities across the U.S.
And we're back. I'm speaking with Dr. Sarah Gordon about the effects of the continuous enrollment provisions during the COVID pandemic on postpartum coverage among people who gave birth while they were covered by the Medicaid program. Before the break, we discussed the quite dramatic findings that this cliff of eligibility loss that used to occur for so many people in the third month after birth has basically been eliminated. But as you noted earlier in the discussion, those continuous coverage provisions have elapsed. We're about almost a year past when they started being phased out. But we are also in a place where there are new provisions available for states that you said the vast majority have taken up. Before we talk about the policy environment, I do want to just go one step deeper into the results you found. Were there differences by race and ethnicity, by maternal age? We do know that the maternal mortality crisis is hitting Black women much, much harder than white women. And so seeing whether or not the effects differ by race seems particularly important.
Yeah, so actually gains in postpartum enrollment under the continuous enrollment provision in our study were relatively similar across racial and ethnic groups. And I should note that this part of our analysis was limited to a smaller number of states because of missing race and ethnicity data in Medicaid claims, whereas our broader findings were national. But for our subset of states that had high enough quality race and ethnicity data, we found a relatively narrow range of postpartum coverage gains, about 29 to 34 percentage points across the different racial groups. So in terms of implications for racial and ethnic disparities, which, as you know, I think are incredibly important in this context, it seems to be affecting different groups similarly with respect to coverage, though we do see quite high continuity of postpartum coverage among Black non-Latino Medicaid enrollees during the continuous enrollment provision. So 95% of Black non-Latino Medicaid enrollees had 12 months of continuous coverage. This was the highest rate among all groups. And we also know that this group has seen some of the worst maternal health outcomes, and there's also disparities specifically in maternal health outcomes between Black and white postpartum Medicaid enrollees in the extended postpartum year. So this is an important finding. The group that had the lowest rates of 12 months of postpartum continuous Medicaid enrollment was the Latino group at 81.1% with 12 months of continuous coverage. And I think that is in part due to some of the findings.
You also looked at maternal age. Is that a factor here?
We found pretty small differences across age. However, younger mothers on average did experience larger coverage gains under the continuous enrollment provision relative to older mothers. I think if I were to guess, this is probably because older mothers are likely to be maybe have had prior children, already be parents, and therefore were able to maintain their eligibility as parents in their state. So therefore, fewer older postpartum individuals were losing their coverage. So the gains that occurred under the continuous enrollment provision were smaller.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'll just say is when you see effects this large, it is harder sometimes to disentangle subgroup effects because basically this looks like one of these, you know, rising tide lifting all boats, and that's a good thing. Well, let's talk then about the current policy environment. State eligibility levels for parents are variable. State choices about participating in the Affordable Care Act expansion, which does not have a requirement to be a parent to be eligible, are variable. So how do we think about this? Is this something that these policies make coverage more continuous no matter what state you're in, or are there certain state policies where the continuous coverage provisions made a bigger difference because of the state policy environment in which it occurred?
Like you said, we don't see very large differences when we look at individual level characteristics, but when we look at these state level policy differences, we actually do see very large differences in postpartum continuity of coverage gains under the continuous enrollment provision. So when we look at the difference by both state level eligibility for parents and whether the state adopted Medicaid expansion in particular. So postpartum coverage gains were over 20 percentage points larger in states that had not expanded Medicaid under the ACA compared to states that had. And this makes sense because in states that had already expanded Medicaid, they already brought up those eligibility limits for low-income adults. So fewer people were losing their coverage after birth before the continuous enrollment provision prevented it from happening. So the gains there are smaller. So this really highlights how much postpartum coverage loss was happening in states that hadn't expanded Medicaid because of how large these gains are. And we saw a very similar pattern when we stratified by categories of parental eligibility limits. So states that had lower parental eligibility limits saw much larger gains in postpartum continuity of coverage under the continuous enrollment provision compared to those that had more generous eligibility limits for parents.
So basically, the more restrictive your eligibility was, the more people are benefited by having continuous coverage provisions. If you were already providing multiple pathways to coverage, there were other ways for people to get on, and the continuous coverage kept them on, but they would have been there anyway. So let's sort of put these puzzle pieces together, if you will. You've done a backwards look at the effects of continuous enrollment provisions, and now we're in a new environment where states have federal support for extending coverage. What does this tell you about what states should expect in terms of implications, whether the choices they face now really mirror the prior provisions? Just help me put those pieces together, if you would.
I think the significance of this study for the current policy environment is that it shows that the continuous enrollment provision, which was put in place to protect health insurance stability so people had access to care during the pandemic, had this really important effect on a group of Medicaid enrollees that we know were at risk of a higher baseline risk of coverage loss. And this is this pregnancy postpartum group, where, you know, about 40% we saw during our 2018 baseline birth cohort were losing Medicaid coverage after birth. So in a way, the continuous enrollment provision was a test of what would happen in terms of coverage if all states adopted the 12-month extension of postpartum coverage. It sort of simulates this policy. And this is actually very important because it's pretty difficult to actually evaluate states that extended coverage to 12 months under the American Rescue Plan because it happened at the same time as the continuous enrollment provision happened and the unwinding of the continuous enrollment provision. So to the extent that there was variation between states that extended coverage and states that didn't, it was masked by these national policies. And now we're at a point where there are very few states left that have not implemented this policy. So a lot of the existing research and this study try to use other policies that are similar extensions of coverage to proxy what we might see if states were to extend postpartum coverage out to 12 months.
So your study really helps us understand the coverage effects, and the fact that so many states have taken up this option gives us a sense of where we're headed. What are some of the other policy issues or research issues that emerge from this set of policies?
Of course, our work here is just a first step. We're trying to get at some of the coverage effects of the continuous enrollment provision, and then also thinking about how those findings might have implications for 12-month postpartum Medicaid extensions. But coverage is just a first step. And I think especially now, since where we are is most states have extended coverage, it's really less of informing states about whether to do this, but how best postpartum coverage can be used to achieve gains in maternal health generally. I think future research will really need to look at specific health outcomes that we know are leading causes of morbidity and mortality in the postpartum year, including follow-up for cardiovascular conditions, mental health conditions, and really start to look at health outcomes specifically, because much of the work we've seen so far has focused more on the coverage and access side. I'll also note that CMS has issued really helpful quality improvement resources for states around improving postpartum care for states that have extended postpartum coverage to help make that leap from coverage to actually improved health outcomes.
Well, Dr. Gordon, thank you for conducting this research and doing such a nice job of explaining it and the policy context in which it occurs. I really want to emphasize where you ended here, which is the goal of all this coverage, of course, is improved health. And we are, as a country, there are many people focused on trying to improve maternal outcomes. And coverage is a facilitator of access to services, but in and of itself, it's only helpful if it translates into actually receiving the services you need to address the health conditions. And so you're helping us look ahead, not just to the questions around coverage, but the questions around health effects seems critical. Thank you for being my guest today on A Health Podyssey.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you'll tell a friend about A Health Podyssey.